Gabby, we're going to move on to something else that arose, as it happens, during Leaders' Questions as well. And this is the issue of the triple lock. Ivana Bacik at Leaders' Questions taking the government to task on this discussion of getting rid of the triple lock. So in brief, run us through what's proposed, what it would involve and who's objecting to it.
Yes, so it emerged over the weekend that Taoiseach, Foreign Affairs and Defence Minister Simon Harris, he's now fast-tracking these laws to unravel effectively the triple lock. And the triple lock, of course, means that if Ireland is to send its peacekeepers abroad, it needs to have a triple sign-off from the UN, from the government and from the Oireachtas. And so the concern there has been there for quite a long time from government that it's the permanent members of the UN Security Council that can effectively veto or can threaten to veto certain peacekeeping missions, and that means that Ireland cannot participate in them. So my understanding of the legislation is that it's not that you won't need a UN mandate at all, but it's that this issue of the veto won't be an issue effectively anymore. You'll just need a government decision, which of course happens at cabinet, and then a Dáil vote, which of course the government has a majority in. So really ploughing ahead with this legislation, of course, to cries from the opposition that this is a further steps to try and undo Ireland's neutrality. The government's denying this and they're just saying, look, previously there was missions that Ireland was not able to get involved in until later on because the UN Security Council didn't move on it. And because countries that have that veto, usually they don't even have to actually carry out the veto, they can just threaten it. And that alone is enough to stop the UN Security Council from taking action.
OK, Ciarán Hearn, it was your party leader who raised that at Leaders' Question today. You want to retain the triple lock. What advantage do you think it confers on Ireland to keep it?
Well, at this time, we think that multilateralism is the way forward and we have to be fighting for that more than ever. So going through the UN using that system is really, really important if for our troops and to maintain our neutrality, our military neutrality. Obviously, we have a long established position of military neutrality, but equally, we cannot be politically neutral in the face of this imperial aggression from Russia in Ukraine or genocide in other parts of the world like Gaza. So, I mean, what we want to see is the protection of the triple lock. As Ivana Bacik said in the Dáil today, the law as it stands allows for the General Assembly of the UN to also pass a resolution allowing Irish troops to proceed. So we don't believe that the Security Council is the veto maybe that is being made out to be.
All right. Although there hasn't been a new UN peacekeeping mission established, I think, since the Central African Republic in 2014. So there are a limited number of them, and I think any of the ones in recent memory have come through the Security Council.
Yes, and I mean, I suppose, look, if we're dealing with what's immediately in front of us as well, it does appear that Russia and the US may agree to some peacekeeping force in Ukraine. They seem to be the noises that are coming right now. So,
Although the Kremlin has rejected that earlier on today. A Kremlin spokesperson said they had not agreed to that.
OK, well, I mean, look, this is all to be negotiated. And obviously, whether or not we would put peacekeepers in there in any case is a matter to be determined.
Sure. Shane Moynan, where would the government want to deploy peacekeepers where there was not a UN mandate in place? Or under what auspices would they want to deploy them?
So imagine if the African Union called for international support for a peacekeeping mission that hadn't been sanctioned by the UN Security Council. Or imagine if there's a European Union-led mission that we wanted to send troops along to. We weren't able to send troops to the Macedonian peace mission because of the triple lock being in place at the time.
I think we would have been able to initially, but then China used its veto not to renew the mandate.
Very much the example you gave about Russia a few moments ago, Colm, I think illustrates the issue with this. So the Russian foreign policy, what we heard according to wires and what we heard according to the Kremlin, changed in the space of 12 hours. That ultimately could exercise a veto on the deployment of the peacekeeping force. There was no triple lock in place between 1960 and 2022, and we still had UN peacekeeping forces there.
Okay,
there's nothing in the removal of the triple lock to stop us contributing to UN peacekeeping forces.
But the only time, in terms of Ireland's intention, the first time it deployed military abroad was in an observer capacity in Lebanon in 1958 and then subsequently in the early 1960s. But that was with a UN mandate when they deployed to the Congo. So where, or under what circumstances would Ireland want to do that? I mean, you've asked me to imagine an African Union scenario, but in the real world, when where would
there wasn't
we want
an African
to do that?
Union in the 1960s that had a sort of peacekeeping request strength that was there. The European Union didn't have a common defence and security policy at the time either. So I would say that the world has probably evolved since the 1960s and 1970s in terms of the multilateralism that Ciarán talks about. The UN, as you said yourself, there hasn't been a UN-sanctioned peacekeeping force there, but we do know there are situations around the world where peacekeeping right. is required. And I would also say, make this important point, there is no relationship between our membership of military alliances and the triple lock here. Ultimately, we would say that any mission that we would set out would still be consistent with the principles of the UN Charter and the values of justice that we hold dear in international law.
Okay. Conor McGuinness, the triple lock, Britain, as a member of the Permanent Five of the Security Council, has a veto over the deployment of Irish troops. Is that independence?
It's very clear to me that Micheál Martin is actually trying to dismantle our neutrality piece by piece. He wants to remove the triple lock, but he won't tell
That's
us what he's going
question,
to...
That's not an answer to the question, in fairness. That's not an answer to the question.
Well, look, Colm, I didn't interrupt you,
fair
Shane.
Enough, sorry.
But
sorry,
if you wouldn't mind, you had quite a bit there to say. He wants to remove the triple lock, but he won't tell us what he's going to replace it with. We need to
okay,
stand
well,
on
sorry,
the side.
Well, no, no, see,
if you don't
but,
mind,
well, no,
it's, I might it's, finish. You asked
well,
me a question.
I did
an opportunity to respond.
No, I did ask you a question, but I mean, yes. Would you be satisfied with the removal then of the triple lock if there was a guarantee of something to replace it?
No, we believe that the triple lock should remain there because we believe that our deployment in peace support operations should be on foot of a UN mandate. The UN is imperfect, but it is the multilateral institution. It is where states come together to discuss and decide and debate world politics and peace operations. We have seen a backslide when it comes to multilateralism and to the rule of international law. And that's not something that we should be supporting.
OK, but I suppose the original question I asked you was, you know, Britain is a member of the Permanent Five. Ireland got its independence from Britain in the 1920s. Britain then maintaining a veto on Irish troops abroad. Is that independence?
Look, I don't support Russia, China, the United States, Britain or France having a veto at the Security Council. Like
no, but neither, none of those countries occupied Ireland.
The UN should have should be reformed. It's in need of reform. But at the moment, it is the best international institution and it is the institution that upholds international law. And we have seen a terrible backslide from other states' parties on UN agencies on support for the United Nations. And we don't need to contribute to that. The triple lock is the best policy that's there at the moment to maintain our neutrality and to ensure that we can continue to play a really strong role as a fair and honest broker across the world in international relations.
Ciarán O'Hearn, one of the things that was said by Ivana Bacik at Leaders' Questions was that, you know, the deployment on a UN mandate is one of the things that contributes to keeping Irish peacekeepers safe. But the Irish peacekeepers in southern Lebanon have the highest rate of fatalities on the UNIFIL mission, more deaths than France, Spain and other NATO members who've been deployed there. So it's simply, as a matter of fact, not true that the triple lock and it keeps us safe.
Look, any deployment of troops anywhere in the world is going to come with risks, and we have to recognise the incredible commitment and the work done by the Irish Defence Forces over many, many decades in cultivating a reputation, an excellent reputation for us abroad. There, as I said, there's no safe place on the earth. We are putting peacekeepers in there for a reason. These guys are putting their lives on the line. We have to respect that. And we need to fund them properly as well. You know, I mean, there is talk now at the moment of increasing funding for our defence forces. And we at the Labour Party support that. You know, we have to, you know, there are pension issues, there are pay issues, there are recruitment retention issues. These are all really, really important things.
Right.
Even having the right equipment for the defence forces.
But to the public's expectations of what the triple lock and military neutrality is achieving on behalf of peacekeepers, do we need to have an honest conversation about that? It's entirely legitimate to have the policy that Ireland has, of course, but I mean, the results it brings for Ireland and the safety of its peacekeepers, do people need to be a bit more frank about that?
Well, that's the conversation that we're having right now, that, you know, there are always risks. If we don't engage anywhere, there won't be any risks.
Okay. Gabby Godovitz-Gaita, how much is this discussion being driven by discussions in Europe, where the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Minister for Defence, Taoiseach are turning up at European Council meetings, having conversations with peers and either being looked at askance when they make contributions on issues on European security and defence, or feeling that there is an expectation on them to foot the bill or take a greater part in EU security and defence policy?
It's war talk. There's no other way of characterising it. And I think finally it is reaching Ireland perhaps a little bit later. And we did see Jennifer Carroll McNeill when she was the junior minister in the Department of Defence, you know, saying that spending on defence should be greatly increased. I think the question around this debate is always, well, who's going to invade Ireland? And the response from government seems to be, well, nobody perhaps at this stage, but, you know, the question of cyber attacks, for example, you know, we did see HSE was ravaged by a quite a lethal cyber attack a couple of years ago and the effect that it had. But I will say, you know, coming from an Eastern European country and speaking to some of the diplomats in Eastern Europe, these conversations that are happening now between Trump and Putin are really of a source of great concern and great worry.
Do they have a view of Ireland?
They have a view of Ireland in the safe that in the sense that I suppose some of those Eastern European countries are in NATO, not all of them, but they feel like they have an extra layer of protection because they are in NATO. They spend a lot of money on defence and they deem that really necessary because they have this aggressive neighbour only a couple of hundred kilometres away who may change their mind and invade at any moment. And I think that's the great concern. I think on the Irish sense, when it comes to threats on, you know, it's not perhaps tanks that are coming in, but it's the sense of cyber attacks or perhaps other sort of, you know, other war tactics that aggressive countries can deploy that can harm Ireland in other ways.
All right. Shane Moynan, is there movement on the issue of spending and the level of ambition for the defence forces? I think back in September, I interviewed the then Taoiseach and now Taoiseach Micheál Martin on Saturday lunchtime programme and asked him about the flight of aircraft potentially carrying weapons over Ireland and whether Ireland should have the capacity to escort them out of Irish airspace. And he said, that's not happening. It's simply not practical. When he was interviewed 2 weeks ago by Justin McCarthy on the This Week programme, he said, well, that's a conversation for further down the line. But he was not as unequivocal about it. So is there definitely a movement in the direction of going to level three in the commission on the future of the defence forces and equipping the Irish defence forces with ships, with planes, with all of the things that were recommended there?
So I think what he said in the Dáil today kind of outlines exactly how we should think of what are the vulnerabilities that exist in our security and defence apparatus at the moment, and how do we undertake the procurement processes to put those, to address those vulnerabilities, and things like knowing what's in our airspace, understanding the extent of cybersecurity attacks and their potential, and the vulnerability of subsea cables as well. And you will see, I think, a movement towards the next level of ambition in terms of that. But I think what he's also being very clear on is that it has to be attainable. It's that it takes time to procure the defence equipment that we need. It takes time to identify where those vulnerabilities are.
I'll come back to everyone on the procurement thing. But Conor McGuinness, Matt Carty, your spokesperson on Foreign Affairs and Defence, has said Sinn Féin supports going to level of ambition 3 as well, which, you know, fighter jets, more ships on the sea, and everything that comes with that.
Yeah, it's Donnacha O'Leary is our spokesperson on Foreign Affairs and Defence. Matt Carty.
I beg pardon, Matt Carty on Justice, yeah, sorry.
Look, the biggest barrier to Ireland participating in peacekeeping operations, it's not a veto, and I think this has to be said, it is the chronic underfunding and under-resourcing of our defence forces for decades under Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. I think kites have been flown about doubling the level of spending that's in the programme for government. The ink is barely dry on that. But I'll believe it when I see it. And we do absolutely need to invest in our defence forces, in conventional forces, and that is aeroplanes, ships and boots on the ground. But we also need to invest, as Gabby quite rightly said, in other forms of defence, to defence against more modern threats that are coming our way that mightn't fit into the conventional kind of defence mould. Donnacha is right in what he said. We do.
I think I heard Matt Carty saying it, but I appreciate that Donnacha O'Leary. Yeah.
I do have to say it, that recruitment and retention remains the biggest problem, and all Micheál Martin's bluster and bravado that might go down well at council and summits, international summits. It flies in the face of the reality on the ground, where establishment were 2,200 personnel below what the establishment should be in the defence forces. When you look at the naval service, that's 20% below what we ought to be.
There was a net increase last year.
for the first time in many, many, many years, we're still a third, over a third below what the complement should be in the naval service. We're quite significantly below in the Air Corps. And when you look at the Defence Forces as a whole, we're 20% below where it should be at an absolute establishment minimum, not to mention where we should be going in terms of the future. But we have issues in terms of patrolling. I come from a coastal area where we have a fishing fleet. In terms of patrolling waters, we don't have the capacity there because of crewing issues. We have had situations where naval ships have been deployed to patrol without their main armament working because of lack of personnel to operate.
Ciarán O'Hearn, what's the Labour Party's position on the level of ambition for the Defence Forces? Are you looking at, you know, ships, planes, level of ambition 3? I mean, I appreciate
it
may not be your portfolio, so that's the
it isn't my portfolio, but what's key for us is that our Defence Forces are safe when they are abroad and they have the equipment, the facilities they need, the training they need, the pay and conditions they need and deserve, and that they're treated appropriately. I mean, we don't have appropriate staff for our naval vessels. You know, we don't, we rely on the UK for air support. We want to always to continue doing that. There are serious conversations to have about our national defence strategy in the context of our continued military neutrality.
What Shane mentioned there was talking about, you know, greater procurement for the Defence Forces. There's going to be another neutrality conversation on that, because if Ireland wants to buy as part of a greater bulk purchase for arms and equipment and achieve economies of scale, there may be a conversation around neutrality there of buying through the European Defence Agency and the like. So we're back into this conversation again.
Yes, of course. And there's a layer of questioning there around how much money do we actually put in? Where do we get that money from? Is there other services that are going to suffer as a result? Like, what are the actual immediate threats? What exactly is Ireland facing here? And I think the other side of the coin on this is we had a damning report come out in recent years into the Defence Forces that said that women are barely tolerated within the force. I mean, that phrase is just really very difficult to get over. So if you're talking about beefing up the Defence Forces, putting more money into them, perhaps, you know, you should start with the personnel and the culture within the organisation. I know there's currently investigations underway, but I think that has to be the base focus of the government.
The recruitment levels were quite low in last year's recruitment figures, despite the net increase. Well, I do get a brief comment from Ollie on this. Shane Moynan, is there going to be, you know, will Ireland be looking for greater European cooperation or will acting jointly with other European countries when it comes to procurement of equipment, and does that have implications for Irish neutrality?
So I think our first principle when we look at the procurement of equipment, especially for defence capability, should be looking at it in an organised way and in a way that guarantees value for money, and I think all options should be on the table for that. But I do think it's important that we have a nuanced debate about neutrality. Increasing our security capabilities, increasing our defence capabilities does not necessarily endanger our neutrality. If anything, it's worth protecting with it.
All right. Conor McGuinness, do you think that acting with other European countries to achieve economies of scale when purchasing for the Defence Forces, do you think that could create issues around our neutrality?
Well, we have to be very careful that it doesn't. We're in a political and economic union and many other aspects of life inside the European Union, but it's not a military alliance. That said, cooperative effort when it comes to procurement, I mean, that can make sense and that should be something that should be considered on a case-by-case basis. That's not to say that that ties us into a military alliance or a mutual defence agreement. We're talking about the purchase of military hardware here.
Okay, Ciarán O'Hearn.
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously walking a fine line here, but we do need to show solidarity with our European colleagues and friends. And, you know, the purchase certainly of non-lethal equipment collectively, I think we could probably be okay with that.
What about the donation of radar to Ukraine on that? How does that walk the line of military aid versus non-lethal aid, in your opinion, Conor McGuinness?
Yeah, so my understanding is that the air defence system that Ireland is proposing to donate to Ukraine isn't a weapon system. It is effectively a civil defence, piece of civil defence infrastructure, an early warning system for attacks by air. And I think in that regard, you know, there's no issue from my point of view. I think we do need to stand in solidarity with Ukraine. I think it's very important that we acknowledge that we're not politically neutral in conflict situations, be it in the Middle East, be it in Eastern Europe, that the war of aggression by Russia is illegal, it's wrong, and it needs to come to an end. And I just want to be very clear on this, that whatever the settlement is in Ukraine, and we all hope that peace comes swiftly, but it has to be a fair and just peace, and it has to be based on respect for Ukraine, and Ukraine has to be at the table when it comes to that. But yeah, just to answer that question, I mean, I think if it's a peace, it's not a weapon system, then I don't think that challenges our neutrality in any way.
Okay, although Shane Moynihan, the problem in Ukraine has been that air defence systems that have had to be deployed in cities can't be deployed on the front line. So if you give people an air defence system, you're freeing up air defence systems that could be used on the front line, potentially.
Potentially, but I think also what we're trying to do is walk this fine line between showing solidarity for Ukraine, but also honouring the spirit of what we said our contribution would be, which would be non-lethal hardware.
Okay. But it's not the same thing. Let's say, for example, you're not sending tanks, but you're sending fuel that will empower tanks. Mm-hmm. Is it not the same thing, in essence?
So I think it comes down to the fine line, right? So ultimately what we are trying to show is signal that I don't think anyone around this table suggests that we are neutral on what's happening in Ukraine, but we are trying to honour the political statement that we as a country have made of not being allied or being seen to be active in a military alliance as well.
All right.
And I think that's ultimately the line we have to draw.
Ciarán Hearn, what do you think? The radar or mine clearance training or this, does that stay within the boundaries of neutrality?
It does, to my mind. We have to play to our strengths as well and play smart and to give the skills, whether it's engineering skills, we can do things that are non-lethal and non-militaristic that we can provide there. We can show solidarity and we need to.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break because we want to get back to with the Children's Rights Alliance. They issued a report card today with government with mixed results, it has to be said, from A's to E's. But we'll get through that alphabet after this.